So, Paul, the iPad says that you can make it all the way to Camarillo per the Glide Advisor. And you've got synthetic vision, you've got a good moving map. Why not go for it and try to make Camarillo, knowing that there are other roads that you could always bail out to, just like your potential bailout change of plan for Santa Paula? Why not try?
Well, so I'm over Santa Paula and I have the one thing I need most, which is altitude, which converts to time. So if I go for the glide, I've got to be exactly on the numbers, and I don't know how accurate that glide advisor is. So I may end up at the airport boundary at 500 feet. I may end up there at 200 feet. And it's true, there is a freeway next to Camarillo. It's the 101, which is likely to be a little busier than Santa Paula. But I don't want to be trying to stuff it onto the 101 from 200 feet. If you're going to set up a road landing, you really need a little bit of altitude to get set up, look for bridges, look for whatever obstructions there are, and try to figure out the timing on the cars. So again, it's a very close call, but to me, a Santa Paula looks like the higher percentage choice.
Bird in hand is worth two in the bush. I'm going to Santa Paula. Got altitude, got an airport, got a road next to the airport. We got options here. Stretching it out for 9 miles. I'm not quite sure about that. That depends on a lot of things, how accurate that glide ring is and how the wind really develops as you get down lower in the descent. I'm staying put there, using that altitude to spec out the situation and set up for the airport that's 1 mile away.
You know, Santa Paula Airport is one of my favorite places on Earth. There is no way I would go there at night. It is a black hole. There are obstructions on all sides. People have real difficulty landing there in a functioning airplane in calm winds in the daytime. Absolutely not going there at night in a glider. It's like, okay, I don't get why you don't believe the glide ring. You know, theoretically, you'd have some indication of the your airplane's glide capabilities before. You know, it's like I could understand going to Camarillo. I could understand landing on the highway. I could absolutely not understand going into this black hole airport at night in a glider. It's just a non-starter for me. The only thing that argues in favor of Santa Paula is that my mom has a hangar there. And if I were to successfully land at Santa Paula, I could get a cup of hot chocolate or a belt of whiskey or whatever she had available. But it's like absolutely not going there.
Yeah, I agree with Paul. It's just too close in that glide ring. And I don't want to be fretting the whole way over of whether or not I inputted all the data correctly to make that glide ring accurate in the first place, and whether or not I'm flying the exact profile I need to fly to make the glide ring. And then there's very little margin for error once I get there. Meanwhile, I've got all the altitude I need over top of this airfield. And now I can focus 100% of my attention into executing the profile to get down over a 6,000-foot runway, which it takes a cardinal, what, maybe 1,000 feet to land and roll out. So I've got a lot of room for error. So I'm with Paul and not Dave on this one. I'm going to take the concrete right underneath me and execute that landing.
So just to be clear, Richard, on this, I want to make sure 6,000 feet is Camarillo. Santa Paula is 2,665 feet by 60,
Oh, my bad. I misread it then. I thought it was 6,000 feet.
Which, you know, I don't know. Does that change your decision? It's less than half as long as you
Nah,
thought it
yeah,
was.
no, I'm still, it makes it a little bit harder to execute, but I'm not giving up the runway for a glide that I should be able to make. I should, but I'm not giving that up.
Yeah, well, it's clear that I was never the boss of the Thunderbirds because I'm not good enough at night to put an airplane glider onto Santa Paula's runway. Like Dave, it's one of the awesomest airports in the country. I just love it. But the thought of trying to circle down over that place and not go off either end of the runway to me is it's a daunting task. And I would take the chance on the highway. I think that the highway would be illuminated by the lights of the cars. I have tons of runway underneath me in a highway that I can get down there with a little bit of speed, go above some streetlights, under a couple of streetlights, put it down between the cars, get on the brakes, and I don't know, maybe that's just my ego talking, but I think I could probably try to do that. And as Paul said, these highway landings are more often than not pretty safe, and people don't usually get hurt. And even if I was going to bump up against the back of a car, I think I'd be going slow enough where I wouldn't really do too much damage.
You know, Michael and David have a unique advantage here in that they know the airport. It would be an extremely difficult choice to make knowing that. Not knowing that, I think it would be an easier choice to make to try to go there, because at 1 mile out, we're in the traffic pattern for Santa Paula. And listening to the scenario, the bit about having a certain amount of overrun and then all of this, who would know that? So I don't know Santa Paula. And if I were flying along, it may not be the right decision, but I would be inclined to try for Santa Paula because it is an airport and I am essentially directly over it. I would interpret my inability to see it to be in part because it's difficult to see an airport you are essentially directly over, even in a high-wing airplane. And portions of the aircraft itself blanket out. And I would be asking air traffic control, since I'm on flight following, for information about lighting, which may or may not exist. So as someone who's not familiar with the area, maybe I would be inclined to go to Santa Paula. I have a question, maybe somebody knows the answer to here, about the glide ring on 4Flight. My assumption, and it never really occurred to me that it might be different than this, is that glide ring describes the area where you have 0 feet above ground level. It's not, okay, I'm going to get to Camarillo and be in a position to land. It's like, I'm going to hit the ground at Camarillo if I do everything exactly right. I have no room to maneuver. My glide ring is based on best glide speed at 1G straight ahead. If I make any turns or anything, that degrades that. So when I see something at the edge of the glide ring, I think that's where I'm going to hit the ground. That's not an airport I'm suddenly over and can spiral down onto. Does anyone have any other data on the glide ring?
So for the purpose of discussion, we did the best research we could on this. I had a message out to 4Flight, but at the time of this recording, you know, we were deep in coronavirusville, so it was hard to get messages back. However, what we do know, the glide ring looks at glide angle. It knows your glide speed, which helps calculate the ring, but it assumes the glide angle that the plane's going to fly. And you can set it manually, or you can pull it out of their database, and it does show on here what it is for what this pilot put in. I think it's 11-1 for this Cardinal. It takes into account that angle, your speed, and the latest winds aloft that it has, right? Which would have been for this pilot, if they had ADS-B, would be a reasonably current winds aloft. And then it also looks at the terrain, and as far as we know, it is the contact point with terrain. So you can see the glide ring is past the airport symbol that's on the chart, but we know that with scaling, you know, the actual airport could be somewhere else, and, you know, right at the edge of that, or there could be more room than you think. So you will get over the runway at Camarillo with some altitude, but for all we know, it could be 20 feet or it could be a couple hundred feet, but it's not 1,000 feet.
The runway is perpendicular to the course, so you're going to have to fly some kind of a pattern, and I believe Camarillo's single runway.
Yeah. Now this brings up an interesting point that Santa Paula has no lights at all, right? So, but that's not something you are going to look up while trying to decide where to glide. You know, you had mentioned, Paul, flying at night. You know, you wouldn't even fly this route at 6,500 feet. But, you know, flying at night in a single-engine airplane, even IMC in a single-engine airplane, I mean, there's inherent risk if you lose that engine. You don't necessarily have good options for sections of the flight, and this is certainly one of them.
You can improve those options, and one way to do that is with altitude. And at night, I always apply the same thing I apply in IMC. Back in the days of paper approach plates, when I fly IMC, IMC being on a trip, I had the plate book out and paging through airports I was going nearby just to have that there, just to be prepared. Because what else did I have to do? I was just sitting there looking at the clag. I do that the same way at night. Now, of course, you do it with an app. And so you look at the airports, what are the options there? Because what else do you have to do? You're just flying the airplanes, probably on autopilot. So, I mean, there are ways to be just completely in the loop on this, be absolutely on top of the bubble that prepare you for these kinds of things. So you're ready if the surprise comes. I mean, I'm fairly paranoid about it and fairly paranoid about engine failures. I look when I fly any single engine, I'm always looking down. What does the terrain below me look like if I have to land this stupid thing?
Did you have something, Dave? Did you want to jump in?
I was just going to say what I would predict would actually happen here is that Paul and our other colleagues who were advocating landing at Santa Paula, they'd set up, they'd make one circle over this pitch black hole in the ground. And then they would say, I'm done with this. I'm land, and now I've lost a bunch of altitude, so I'm landing on the highway. But either way, it's going to end up somewhere other than Santa Paula Airport.
Well, in terms of if you actually had to do this circle down, or you were to try and set up, and you know, maybe there is about a half moon in this scenario. So if it was completely dark, yeah, you're not going to bring the airplane into total blackness. But there is, you know, you were able to see that parking lot from above, which no one decided to go for, probably wise. From above, it looks bigger than it is. But there's going to be some amount of city lights here, which is both a blessing and a curse, right? It might illuminate the airport enough to go for it. But it's also going to start to trash your night vision because you're looking into these pinpoint bright lights as you get closer to the ground. You talked a little bit, Paul, about practicing this circle down. How would we do that? How do we incorporate this kind of thing into training in a relatively safe way? I know, Dave, you're also a big proponent of practicing with synthetic vision and with a safety pilot on board for a situation like this, because you do have synthetic vision. You actually are going to see on your iPad, if you can't see that runway out ahead of you, Santa Paula Airport's going to appear right there in front of you with a nice big number, obstacles on the side saying, right here, siren song, bring it in.
Well, I've done this in the training scenario. When I was based in Connecticut and doing a lot of instruction, we had several airports around there that were pilot-controlled lighting. Traffic wasn't that heavy, so you could go land on a dark runway. Did it at Oxford, Connecticut, did it at Merritt Markham, did it at a couple places. And I didn't find it especially difficult. We were doing it with old school GPS. I remember doing it with a Garmin 100. All it had was numerical data, but you could set up a pretty accurate pattern and get yourself on a setup to final and turn on landing light, see the runway. The problem was always altitude judgment because you didn't have any visual cues and there was always a tendency to be too high. But it can be done. And I think synthetic vision, I haven't done it much with synthetic vision, but I think synthetic vision, if you practice with it, would really be a huge benefit.
And maybe as a, you know, top down until you're aligned with the runway and then synthetic vision for the last part. I know, Dave, you've practiced some landings with synthetic vision. You said it was actually pretty straightforward, right? Once you were lined up.
Right. We practiced it with a fully functioning airplane in an engine out scenario. So totally different. And it's like if you land short on runway 4 at Santa Paula, you're in a trailer park. And then if you make it past the trailer park, there's a berm that goes right across the threshold of the runway. It's like, in case I wasn't clear before, not going to Santa Paula.
Well, let me pick up on that then. In this, the Glide Advisor, when it came out, people love the fact that it's there. I think it's an amazing tool. It also would be pretty hard to say no to, right? And you heard that from ATC. It was like, you know, airport, 11 o'clock, 9 miles. And that also would be pretty hard to turn down, especially if Santa Paula didn't exist. If you were going, I'll ask Dave, and I think it was Michael also said they were going, they not landed at Santa Paula, so Camarillo might be something you'd go for. How long would you stay on course for Camarillo, seeing whether it got better or worse before you bailed? And let me taint this a little bit with, we've talked about wires and things over the highway. I haven't heard anyone talk about highway signs. That's the one that would terrify me. All those highway signs, the you know, billboard sized across the highway with a nice big triangular structure behind them that I ain't going through. And I'm not seeing those at all at night.
No, you are seeing them. You will definitely see them at night. because they're reflective, and if you have your landing light on,
but I'm a glider, so maybe they'd show up right before me. But anyway,
well, you still have an electrical system. People fly under them all the time. I mean, we've got videos of people either zooming over them or flying under them. So that's the least of the problem. It's the wires that you won't see, and that would be true on that road beside the airport, beside the industrial lot as well. That's what would shoo me away from that.
How long, Michael? You see, like you were raising your hand there. How long would you keep going for Camarillo before you bailed?
Well, that's why I wanted to talk. I wouldn't. If there's a piece of pavement underneath me that I think I can get on, I'm not going to risk going across 9 miles of unfamiliar territory and leave myself at half my altitude with no options. If there's a piece of pavement beneath me, I'm going to go for that. And as Paul said, I think my landing light is it's going to illuminate any of the signs. It won't illuminate the wires, obviously. So there's just a little, it's just one of those risk things. You just have to deal with it. And it is what it is. But I'd get the airplane down there above the surface of the highway a little fast, give myself some options, and put it down when I felt it was necessary and it was safe to do so.
Well, I agree with Dave that I probably, as I was trying to say earlier, maybe didn't express it well, my first inclination would be go to Santa Paula, but then I would see, I can't get the lights turned on, not even knowing there are no lights. And so I would bail and go for the highway. But just as a technique that gets at some of this, and I was being genuine when I was asking about the height at the edge of the glide ring, because I wasn't certain about that. But in the airplane I most commonly fly, the glide ratio is published at a little better than 10 to 1. And one of the things I've done to protect myself is when I set up the glide ring on my own iPad, I made that glide ring a 9 to 1 ratio. I've given myself a little bit of wiggle room for not getting things exactly right by not even making me think I can get, the first third of the runway is within the ring, so I'm going to be able to make it. So I would have to be real conservative about that. But I wouldn't think I would want to go for the parking lot, because if it's a brightly illuminated parking lot, that means there are lampposts everywhere. So I think, like I said, I'd be kind of like what Dave suggested. I would aim for Santa Paula and then pretty soon realize that's not going to work. And by that time, I had completely eliminated the chance of Camarillo, even if I'd wanted to go there in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. And hearing Michael and Dave Hirschman talk about Santa Paula, it makes me realize I would have committed to that and probably realized that it was too tough to do somewhere in there and taking the road. But even knowing that in hindsight, I wouldn't change my decision, because to go all in on Camarillo is just too much. You're leaving yourself no options if you don't make that glide ratio, or you're leaving yourself unknown options, because who knows what's out there. And I want to go back to it. The moon illumination would make a big deal here. If you get a full moon, you should be able to see Santa Paula, and you should be able to execute that perhaps a little better. The more you lose the moon illumination, the more difficult this scenario gets, and the more likely you're going to end up on the road.
You know, this brings up the whole issue of risk management. You know, night, single engine, cross country, in my book, goes into the same bucket with low IFR single engine, overwater single engine. You need to consider a whole bunch of things as to whether you even want to do this flight. There's no urgency to do this flight. And if you're going to do it, you really need to consider things like moonlight, options along the way. It can be pretty dicey. You only've got one engine to work with here, and if anything goes wrong, you're landing. The question is where.
You know, one question I had about this scenario is, what's with this mag drop or lack of mag drop? What is this? Is this a red herring, or are you trying to tell us something here?
So, in all of these scenarios, since you asked, I always try to put in several things for us to talk about and potential points. I totally separately was doing research on a book about engine management, and lack of a mag drop, and particularly with the magneto system, could mean advanced timing on that one mag and it could mean that it is slipping, and such that the no mag drop at all, that one mag could be quite advanced. If it continues to advance in flight, detonation, sudden engine failure. So that actually is, you know, you talk about risk management, Bob, and I think that's a great sort of takeaway from this whole thing. The airplane was talking here, and the pilot didn't know what it was saying, that can cause a catastrophic engine failure. Very small risk that that's what really is happening, but that's something to keep in mind, just like the altitude choice, where they were flying, how ambitious their glide ring was set for, whether it was book value or something less, and staying engaged in the flight as they're going along, going, you know, if things fall apart here, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? How am I going to assess it on the way down? And as Richard said, like, at what point do I fully commit and take my lumps? Or at what point can I still bail, come up with an option to maybe land on the road and try that out? Because if you're going to use a single engine airplane for anything other than a brilliant CAVU day, you're going to have to hedge against some of these increased risks to get those increased benefits.